You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. It is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Not sure the city's ready for that upbeatness of hello, Houston, how you doing?
I love my peeps, so we got to keep it as positive as we can, but otherwise, it was a devastating night in the city of Houston.
Should we, or is this a day of mourning? And we mourn the Astros season coming to an end yesterday, and we do it for a day, and then we move on.
I'm fine either way. Obviously, there's tons of things to converse about and discuss. Just not the way we wanted it to go. I mean, I know all these ridiculously over-the-top optimists after that Soler home run, I'm sure we're still thinking, we're fine. I was not so much. Everything we had feared, and I was going to text you in the first two innings going, hey, maybe a whole lot better than we expected. Two scoreless innings out of Garcia. But I was right there thinking along the way, I don't care how good he looks. That's why I even said to you, four was too much. And I was thinking four, no matter what. I wasn't pushing him further than that. But the more I thought about it, one time through the lineup and you're good. And we were almost there. And then the bottom just completely fell out. And then a rocket ship took off and got out of Minute Maid Park.
I don't know if it's the superstitious side of me or what, but I hate talking about how a pitcher's looking early in a game. Like, I guess I have that fear in the back of my mind that they're about to give up a grand slam, like in the third inning. You think those things. Okay, looking sharp. I was a little worried, actually, in the first inning. I thought he was missing his locations quite a bit. He had the velo. I thought his stuff was fine, but I didn't think he was hitting his spots early. I thought he got away with a couple of pitches in the first inning. Like the 0-2 to Albies, too, to start that spark in the third inning. Another example of that. And look, I don't want to sit here and talk about pitchers on short rest. The Astros just got beat yesterday. It didn't matter what happened or who you threw. The Braves just beat you. And they beat you the entire series, too. I mean, they win the series in six. To me, it got away in game four. Like, if you win game four, you should have won that game. You had a two-run lead throughout. The back-to-back homers. Revisionist history in hindsight 2020, that's where the series was lost, in my opinion. Much different series if you win that one. But yeah, I think that's what we're going to do today. I think we're going to open up our phone lines, let everybody get their two cents in on the Houston Astros, whether you want to be positive, whether you want to be negative, whether you want to grieve the fact that they lost another World Series. But we'll do a good chunk of that throughout the show. 713-780-ESPN. To me, there was two critical moments. And again, look, 7-0 game. The Braves beat you yesterday. You have to tip your cap to them. You tip the cap, they beat you in six. Congratulations to the Atlanta Braves. But the first two moments of the game early that, to me, changed the scope of the way the game was going to go the rest of the way, and credit to Max Fried, he was outstanding. Yep. The bottom of the first, you get an immediate break early. You get Luis Garcia. How's he going to look on short rest? He gets out of the first inning unscathed. You have first and second, nobody out. You get the huge break on the play at first base with Fried initially missing the bag, and then Walt Weiss, whoever he was talking to on the phone, didn't challenge that play because Fried hit the bag.
I don't think he hit the bag.
Oh, absolutely he did. Replay showed he hit it twice. He hit it with his foot, and he hit it with his tail foot that whipped around, and he tapped it with his glove. No doubt.
I never saw him hit the bag. I thought neither one of them hit the bag, and then they didn't pay bother to go back and tag him, so he walked back and touched first base.
The slow-mo replay they showed, now they showed it late, so you have to have a certain amount of time before you can challenge the play. He absolutely touched the base. Touched the base not only with his glove, but also his little trail foot that whipped around.
There was an ex-umpire who responded to Jeff Passan, because Jeff Passan was like, that's an out. What are we doing? Apparently, according to this umpire, if a runner passes the base and you have not touched the base, you have to go tag him or appeal to the umpire, or you just can't simply tag the base once he's passed the base.
Well, if you challenge it in that spot, though, that's now an appeal. So well, he didn't touch the bag. He would have been called
out. Well, you can't. He didn't say challenge. You have to directly appeal to that umpire and go, hey, that's an out. But if it goes to replay, then it's too late.
Did you see his foot touch the base, Dale?
Not initially. No,
there was replays. Did you see the replay? I never saw a replay that showed his foot touch the base.
No doubt about it. I mean, 100% certain. Not only his foot, but also his glove.
Don't bite him on this.
I can't.
They showed the slow-mo replay. I mean, I didn't dream it.
Okay.
It happened there in the first. 713-780-ESPN, because Joel doesn't take me on his word. Did you see the slow-mo replay?
There's no trust here.
Where Fried not only touched the bag with his glove or with his foot. Either way, like even if it's a play where now Brantley's passed the bag at first, you didn't appeal it. That was a break for the Astros regardless. The Astros had runners at first and second, nobody out. And the fact that you don't manufacture there, Correa striking out, not a good AB. Yordan Alvarez, the slow chopper to the right side. And then Yuli Gurriel just got blown away with a 98-mile-per-hour from Fried, which I didn't know he had in him. And then I saw on Twitter moments ago, it was the hardest pitch he's ever thrown in his life. The fact that you didn't score there in the first, it gave me bad feelings in that moment. You'd had to capitalize right there.
I know we're in the whole love and encouragement for Carlos Correa phase, but I've been saying throughout this World Series, he's been hot garbage at the plate, with the exception of the Carlos Correa time touching the wrist home run. But again, my biggest harping on Correa has been he watches too many good pitches. He watched two fastballs right down Main Street that he didn't even offer at, and I was like, oh my God, this is not the time. I mean, at the very least, you claw and you scratch and you get one run, right? You concentrate with two strikes, trying to push the ball to the right side. You try and do anything to try and move the runners over, advance them so a sac fly scores them. But you got to get a number there, because we've seen the numbers throughout this series and throughout these playoffs. It was like 28-8. For the whoever scores first wins the game, and they did not do what they had. What they had a phenomenal opportunity to do: get that first run on the board, send a message to the Braves. We're at home now. We're comfortable. This is going to be a dogfight. We're ready for it. Instead, you go scoreless. They get all the momentum in the world. He comes off the mound all jacked up. They come back ready to play, going, "Hey, we're going to be in this thing."
Yeah, the fact when he walked off the mound with that 98-mile-per-hour gas and he let out that little roar, I was like, uh-oh.
Yep.
Uh-oh. Max Fried might have brought it today, and he did. And then in the third inning, these were the two biggest situations of the game. The Astros failing to capitalize in the first, runners at first and second, nobody out. And then in the third inning, just the way that whole inning materialized with Luis Garcia on the mound. The inning started with Ozzie Albies singling on an 0-2 count. And that's that was something that I was noticing from Garcia even in the first couple of innings. He was missing his spots according to the count. He had another 0-2 pitch. I forget who it was the first couple of innings. It might have been the leadoff guy, Rosario, and he smoked it into right field.
It was Rosario, and Tucker made the play.
Lead off the game, 0-2 count, left it over the middle of the plate. He smoked it into right, but Tucker made the diving catch, so I was worried about that. Then you walk Rosario with two outs, setting up Jorge Soler, who's been outstanding in the series and would later go on to win the World Series MVP. 3-2 count for forever. I mean, Soler was battling pitch after pitch after pitch, and I realized there was a check swing in there that was awfully close. But after he was fouling off pitch after pitch after pitch and he saw everything, you just had the feeling that Luis Garcia didn't have it in him to put him away. And I'm not advocating that Dusty Baker should have come and got him in that moment. That's not realistic. But in that spot, even though you have runners at first and second, two outs, you have Rayleigh, the lefty, warming up for the lefty Freddie Freeman on deck. I don't put a 3-2 pitch with Soler fouling off pitch after pitch after pitch anywhere near the zone.
I'm trying to
get him to chase on a breaking ball outside. He didn't do it. He gave up the bash, and it was over from
that
Jeremy,
point. That's what we talk about when we talk about either passing the baton or trying to be the egomaniac at the plate that regardless has to get his swing in because he wants to do it. I think Luis Garcia knew he was done after that batter. He wanted to keep fighting, so he was going to do whatever he could because he didn't want to let Rayleigh come in for him. And I think that was just stubbornness, whether it's right or wrong. I think that's what his mentality was. Because the other thing is, when you're on short rest, you know the first thing that's going to miss is your location and the crispness of your breaking pitches. So the fact that he could not locate any pitches, he kept staying. And Smoltz was fantastic last night, whether he's a Braves guy and you don't like him doing the broadcast or not. At least from the insight, from a pitcher's perspective, he had so much he brought to the table. and he kept keeping the batter's eye level at the very same position in that lower part of the zone where he wants the pitch. They've shown his hot spot. It was just right down Main Street. So if he could miss and miss high with a fastball, so there's no doubt he would have chased it.
And even if he doesn't, ball four, so be it. I'd rather have that than the little cutter, slider, whatever. I mean, Smoltz calls it a slider. Garcia calls it a cutter. It's really the same action. The fact that he left that pitch over the plate, game over at that point. I had the feeling, I mean, you still thought that the Astros would have a shot. Dansby added the two-run homer. That was pretty much the dagger. But even with the way Fried was pitching, you didn't feel too confident about scoring three runs, especially with the bullpen being active as well. The mindset of the Astros at the plate yesterday I thought was curious as well. They were attacking. They were attacking Max Fried early in the count. It's why he was so economical and threw so few pitches going deep into the game. Didn't really work counts. They were first pitch swinging. We saw that left and right. Fried was throwing his fastball a little bit more. But the game plan at the plate yesterday against Fried was obviously attack early, and Fried took advantage of the Astros hitters in that regard.
He really did. And, you know, when you look at it and you kept going batter by batter, they just didn't look like they had a really good game plan against him, and he looked like he was in full attack mode. And once he, like you mentioned, once he got through that first inning, once he realized that his fastball had great velocity and that he actually dodged a bullet, you could tell the confidence was building to where he felt like every pitch that he threw was going to be where he wanted it to be, and then he was just in full attack mode. I don't know what the Astros' plan was, but they watched way too many good pitches, and they continued to watch too many good pitches. And then, of course, you got the fact that, you know, everybody can sit there and blame this or blame that or say Dusty or say, you know, whatever you want to say about the pitching woes. You can't win a World Series when more than half the reason why you got there was you had one of the most prolific offenses in baseball, one of the top three if you don't think it was the best offense in baseball, and then you just start checking off the list of guys that didn't contribute or barely contributed or barely showed up. Bregman, Yordan, Correa, Altuve with the exception of two home runs. And you go, well, there's a majority of your lineup. If you don't hit, you don't score. If you don't score, you don't win against anybody, let alone a team that was riding as high as the Braves.
Astros scored four runs combined in the four games that they lost, were shut out twice. They scored two spots in the other two games that they lost. It wasn't a lack of pitching. You would have loved to have McCullers. You would love to have Justin Verlander, Ryder, at least the highest paid player on your team. You would have liked them to be contributors. Look, I mean, the Braves were without their best player too, Ronald Acuna. Not in this series. Charlie Morton pitched a couple of innings in this series. So no excuses for the Astros. The offense certainly didn't show up. And credit to the Atlanta pitching staff too. They were great. And Fried was outstanding yesterday as well. Disappointing for the Astros. You're left with three World Series appearances in a five-year span, five ALCS appearances, but only one championship. And that is a bit of a disappointment. This season, like, I'm not going to say, oh, this season was a failure. This season was terrible. I'm not going to do that. Because you go to the World Series, you're one of only two teams that are left standing. You win the AL. It's a good year. But you do have a bitter taste in your mouth that the Astros didn't get the job done in the World Series this season. It is a bit of a disappointment. We grieve the Astros today, and we want you to grieve with us. Text us, call us. We'll get to your calls whenever we return. 713-780-ESPN. Mark, we'll get to you whenever we come back. 713-780-3776. Astros falling to the Braves in the World Series in six. How we feeling on this afternoon after Houston? We're also on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter, and I'm at Jeremy Branham. Your calls, your texts, more of this Astro conversation on the hills of them losing the 2021 World Series. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Sad day in the city. Houston Astros falling in the World Series to the Braves, 7-0 in the series clincher. Now you have the Texans to look forward to. Losers of 7 in a row. Nick Casario talked earlier, said a whole lot of nothing. The Houston Rockets covered yesterday. That's a bright side. Jalen Green looked pretty good. 713-780-ESPN. How you feeling about the Astros a day after they lost the World Series? Positive, negative, anywhere in between, let us know. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Mark, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hello?
Hey, Mark. You're in the Hive.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I'm 100% with the Joel on this one. The guy at the first baseman's foot never came close to touching that bag. No, it was close.
I'll bet you $100. I'll bet you $100 right now, Mark.
Okay, I'll bet you.
All right, sounds good.
His foot did not touch that bag. It was close.
Now his right foot didn't. His lead foot didn't. The one that got stepped on didn't, but the other foot did.
Right.
As did his glove. But appreciate the call, Mark. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for the support, Mark.
Regardless.
Yeah, I expect you to send that $100 here to the station here pretty soon. 5353 West Alabama. That's the address, right?
Mm-hmm.
A few texters saying that they saw the play as well. It was probably about a minute after the fact.
I just never saw that.
A lot of people didn't. There's some other texters that saying that they didn't see it as well. Killer Bees, gentlemen, try being a Mariners fan in Houston, a baseball fan, and cheered for the AL representative. That's good. Good pitching beats good hitting. You don't score, you lose, but definitely not disappointing, rather exciting. 5 ALCS titles, 1 world championship of the world. Amazing run from an outstanding group of homegrown talent. Simply amazing. Look, it's been a good run. The fact that you have one title, it's disappointing, especially after you came so close in 2019. You were 2 games away from getting it done here in 2021.
You know what, Jeremy? In my opinion, the entire thing just was turned upside down on the back-to-back home runs in game, was it 4? In game 4?
Yep.
They're winning for 7 innings. And Javier, who, you know, you have no problem going to, because even though we had talked about the fact that he went to a different rotation of pitchers at different spots than he normally would, but Javier is a guy that's been lights out that everybody's been talking about. Whether he was loose enough or not, you can't go back and change that, but you felt good that this was a guy that could get people out, and then lo and behold, he gives up 2 massive home runs that end up changing the series and turning it on its head if you're an Astros fan, because, you know, going into that inning, you thought, hey, this is fantastic. They're going to at least make sure we're coming back to Houston. They got a chance with Fromber on the mound, their best available starter, to come back in game 5 and get you a lead going into the last 2 games. And then just like that, in the blink of an eye, 2 home runs in 1 inning, and boom, the next thing you know, you're being shown the door early, you're out in 6, and it's over. And it's the way baseball works. And sometimes you can be the best team, but if you're not the hottest team and you're not the luckiest team that stays injury-free, you're going to end up like the Astros.
Yeah, there is some aftermath of this as well. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776. Aftermath of this as well. After the game, we found out that, not really a surprise, he alluded to this, Brent Strom is stepping away. Bob Nightingale saying that he's going to retire. He didn't say that he was closing the book. Strom didn't. But Nightingale tweeting out a little bit before the show that he's expected to retire. I could see him being an advisor for somebody.
Absolutely.
He talked about how he wants to travel, spend time with his family, enjoy life a little bit. But I could see him going out to like spring training and advising and maybe watching some film from home. So I don't think he's done with the game. But I don't believe he'll be a pitching coach ever again.
Well, as he explained it too, he really likes the guys below him that worked with him all year. And he felt like if he didn't step away, those guys would get away from this franchise. And it's obvious how much he cares about this franchise. And he had said the travel had been taxing, that, you know, he wanted to spend more time with his wife. So there were other issues that go into this. But I totally think that someone's going to throw a whole lot of money at him and say, hey, guess what? You don't have to travel. Go to spring training, come to some home games, work with our pitchers if someone has an issue, watch video on your spare time, and you know, work with us, and we'll give you a boatload of cash. And I'm sure that he would definitely consider it. I think A.J. Hinch would consider it. I think that anyone that's worked with him, pitchers that have gone to other places, Garrett Cole and otherwise, would probably say this is a guy that can really change pitchers' lives in terms of their career. Did you hear when Vanessa Richardson, who we had on yesterday, asked him the question of what he's most proud of?
I didn't.
It was really interesting because you could say, well, you know, was this, you know, Cy Young here or developing these young pitchers here? He said the fact that he was able to bridge the gap between what he knew and saw and taught and felt as a pitching coach and the analytics to make the numbers not only work but make sense to where he could teach them was really interesting.
Huh. I mean, I could see a baseball guy like Strom, like that's the thing that excited him the most. One of the good guys in baseball, sad to see him go. I do like that the law firm of Murphy and Miller, which are the two pitching coaches under him, got to spend time with him. I hope that it helps them in their career. But it's going to be a big loss for the Astros. He was terrific at his job with the Astros. Also in the aftermath, what's next for Dusty Baker? After the game, the uncertainty. He was without a contract, basically a free agent as far as managers go. But Bob Nightingale also reporting that the Astros are expected to rehire Dusty Baker, resign him. So according to Bob Nightingale, Dusty Baker will be back as the manager of the Houston Astros, which I think overall he's pretty good at his job. I think he's good. I think the area that he's really good at is the area we don't see. I think he's outstanding in the clubhouse. I think his players love playing for him. Jose Altuve, we'll listen to him a little bit later, spoke really well of Dusty Baker. Carlos Correa, who we're expecting to leave the Houston Astros, spoke really well of Dusty Baker. We always had that, you know, that thought too, that Dusty's really good, clubhouse guy, a player's manager, and they all spoke very well of him. They all vouched for him. I don't like him as a game manager. I don't think he's a very good manager in game. I think he's pretty poor at it, in fact. So I can go either way. I don't hate that the fact that he's coming back as the manager of the Houston Astros, but look, I'm going to be the first one to criticize his managerial moves next season, but I don't hate that he's back as the manager of the Astros.
Well, I mean, look, I felt like you and I differed on this, but I felt like he was going to be back, or at least he deserved to be back. I didn't know if he for sure he'd be back, because the one thing that was the wild card was just the relationship between him and the analytics department and James Click, and even he alluded to it throughout this playoff run that there were times that he didn't agree with certain decisions and certain, you know, players that they wanted him to play, but sometimes it worked out, sometimes it didn't, but that he was kind of warming to it. But in terms of just the results, and I was talking to one of my best friends back home in Wisconsin on the way in and just trying to explain to him, because he had questions about Dusty Baker as well. I said, look, ideally he was the best guy for this job. He had been through a lot of this turmoil in dealing with a lot of the outside noise from a baseball perspective. To do what he did even last year with just a 500 ball club, but once they got into the playoffs, to make the run that they made, and to have all of these guys in the locker room have buy-in, because let's be honest, too. We've seen this with the Texans. If there wasn't buy-in, if these guys weren't buying what he was selling and they didn't like his style, they would have found a way to let you know. And these guys are outspoken enough, too, that they were going to call it like they experienced it. To hear Altuve after the game say he absolutely should be back, to hear all the guys sing his praises. You know what? He's not a new wave analytics manager. But you know what he is? He's a really, really good dude that has the respect of his locker room because he's been there, done that as a player and as a manager. And I'm with you. You and I, and we take heat for this, but we call it like we see it. There's a ton of, and I was explaining this to my buddy. I said, look, there's a ton of non-traditional moves that he makes based on gut feeling that it drives me nuts. And for the most of the year, either they didn't work out or I felt like he didn't prove why he did what he did and it was successful. However, in the playoffs, when I said these are going to be the decisions that can be the difference between going home and going on, every button he pushed for the most part with the bullpen got him to where he got to, right? You can argue till you're blue in the face the Urquidy move, and like you talked about in game four, the way he used his pitching staff. But without some of the moves that he just went with during the course of the Red Sox series, they're not in this position.
I thought he managed well in the playoffs. And coming from me, I mean, I'm the first one to criticize him. So I have no problem with him returning. I'll be the first one to criticize his managerial moves next season. I feel like he's accepted the analytical part, the sabermetric side of the game, too. He's willing to listen to advice. My fear here is what happens to Espada. Does Espada seek another job? Because to me, Espada is the smartest baseball mind in that dugout. And if he leaves because of this move, I don't love that part of it.
Well, why don't I suggest this to you and see what you think? Why not you do where you got a coach in waiting, where whether in college or otherwise,
true,
right, where you just say, hey, you know what? It is going to be your job at some point. We will pay you like it's going to be your job at some point. We'll pay you as the highest coordinator in football wise, an offensive or defense coordinator. Will make you associate head coach.
I'm here for it, because Joe Espada should be the manager of the Houston Astros at some point. And if maybe it's 2 years away because Dusty comes back for two more seasons, I'm fine with that. I like Joe Espada a lot. If making Dusty the manager next year forces Espada to leave, I think that that's a mistake. But if he's the right hand man of Dusty Baker for a year or two and then he's the manager after that, totally in favor of the move. And I do think Dusty accepts the, you know, the advice of James Click and Joe Espada. If he didn't, I don't think the Astros would be re-signing him. So good news on that front, but I'll still be criticizing him next year. You know I will.
Absolutely, you should.
And then the big one, of course, Carlos Correa. Has he played his final game as a Houston Astro? Some of the post-game sound kind of sad, to be honest with you. And it does appear that, and look, this again, not a surprise, that Carlos Correa's days with the Astros are over.
Yeah, you know, and I'm in a different camp than you on this one. Look, I completely tip my cap to what he did here. And I'm not taking anything away from what he's done in the playoffs or what he did this season when he bet on himself. And it's a really ballsy move for anybody to do, let alone to then see it through to succession to where he's going to get paid. But when I look at him, and again, I'm trying to look at this from just a realistic, rational point of view in analyzing talent. I don't see Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't see one of the top three young talents in this game. So if they can work out a deal like you've been encouraging, which I think is the best approach, pay him a little bit more on the front side, but so that you don't get stuck holding a really bad contract for the last 3 to 5 years of it, then I'm open to having them in the middle of these discussions and fight until the bitter end. But if it means paying him $300-some million, I saw too much again last night of what I've seen consistently out of Carlos Correa. He lets way too many good pitches just pass him by without even making an attempt at them because he's overthinking in at bat what he thinks is coming. I'm a little concerned about some of the greatest strengths he has in terms of defensively are going to diminish as he starts to cross 30 with his range, with his arm. And again, this was the only year I've seen him live up to a full schedule, stay healthy, and do the things offensively that he really wasn't able to consistently put up throughout his career in Houston. So I'm not crapping on him. I'm not here for the 10 years and $300-some million. I'm here for a shorter deal, even if he gives more money up front. That's what I'd like to see.
I'm with you. You can't afford to pay Carlos Correa if he's going to get the money that is being rumored. Maybe there's ways you can manage it where you front load it. Maybe it's not as big a deal as we're expecting. Also, the collective bargaining agreement could be a wrinkle in free agency as well. But if he's getting somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 million 10 years or something along those lines, Astros can't afford to pay that. It would just take up too much of their payroll going forward. 713-780-3776. When we return, Doug Glanville, former big leaguer, currently works at ESPN as a Major League Baseball analyst, wrote an article saying that Dusty Baker makes these Astros about so much more than a scandal. We talked to the former big leaguer, Doug Glanville, when we return on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line. Former big leaguer Doug Glanville currently works at ESPN as the MLB as an MLB analyst. Doug, you know, you look at this World Series, Braves win it in six. To me, it was the Braves pitching outmatching the Houston Astros offense. How would you, analyze this World Series?
Well, I have to agree with how the pitching lined up and how well the Braves pitchers performed. You look at the challenges the Astros faced with just the depth of starters. You know, they had a lot of inconsistency at who was starting the game. Some days, you know, they would be sharp. The other days, give up, you know, five in the first. So, you know, those struggles eventually caught up with them. And you think about how the Braves, someone like Max Fried, who even when he didn't pitch as well, he gave them depth. He went deep enough into the game. And that created an opportunity for the Braves to set up their bullpen and match up better for the late innings, which is where the Astros were really strong before the World Series. So a lot of the pitching and just great timely hitting, especially, you know, the big, big home runs. And, you know, eventually it was just too much for the Astros.
Great article, by the way, in terms of kind of highlighting Dusty Baker and everything. I'm interested in kind of a spinoff of that, because I've been saying all along, I really thought this team had to win it all to kind of shut people up outside of the Houston and Texas area in terms of the fact that, yeah, absolutely they cheated in 17, but the fact that you're penalizing how much talent and how good this team has been over this five-year stretch. They didn't win it all, but I still feel like, for the most part, they sent a pretty clear message that this was a really hyper-talented team. They just weren't able to get over the mountaintop. Your assessment of now, as far as this team got without winning at all, and how that changes any perception of this ball club?
It's a great team, you know, a really talented team. And even 2019, if they, you know, they won the World Series, they probably would have gone down to top three teams of all time, the way the Yankees in 27. I mean, they were just loaded. So I just think that it can be both. You know, yes, they had the scandal, but at the same time, you can have a lot of talent. And, you know, we look at PEDs, for example. There's a lot of players that, you know, got wrapped up in PEDs and made that decision. And they're also really good players. And in fact, many of them were really good players. So, you know, that's the challenge in going down that road, because it clouds the fact that you have an ability and that you're actually a really good team. And I think Dusty Baker brought that, you know, return to understanding that, wait, you're already good. You don't need any extras. You know, you compete, you play within the rules, and you do your thing, and you're just going to be successful. And so, it's 2020, 2021, they took the next step, and they found that, you know, that swagger again. They found that fact that they were already a really good team. And I give a lot of credit to Dusty Baker and his ability to remind players, which he always did, that something is at play that's sort of bigger than you, and you have to be humble. And at the same time, just remember that to get to this point, you've already had a lot of success that can guide you forward.
Doug Glanville, former big leaguer, joining us on the HRMP guest line. Also played for Dusty Baker in his big league career. And reports are that the Astros will bring back Dusty for at least another year, maybe two, that according to Bob Nightingale. My analysis of Dusty Baker is that overall he's a pretty good manager. I don't know if he's a great in-game manager, but I think he's wonderful in the clubhouse. What makes him so good in the clubhouse?
Dusty is just, you know, legendary when it comes to skills with people and making you feel valued and part of something bigger than yourself. He lives it. It's not just words. And every day you feel like someone has your back and that he's going to spend a lot of time making sure that you come together as one. And he embraced the fact that everybody's coming from different places, different backgrounds, different opinions, different countries. And he celebrates that in the way that we try to learn from each other. And I find that to be very powerful, because baseball always gave us the unique opportunity of every spring training coming to the camp and recognizing that, wait a minute, we're all coming from all over the place. We may not even know a lot of guys, but yet we have to find a common goal and figure out how we can learn each other and respect each other in what we need to accomplish. So Baker was tremendous at that. And for me, the direct connection was, you know, I lost my father the year before I played for Dusty. I was traded that next season to the Cubs at the break, at the deadline. And it was a time when I was sort of looking, you know, father figure, first time I was having a season without my dad. And Dusty was tremendous. He really took the time out to talk to me, sometimes calling me into the Baker principal office, whatever it took. And you know, really was wonderful. So that is his strength. And I'm glad to see that, especially a lot of the veteran managers coming back, Bob Melvin and so on, to see that they have so much to add. And yes, there's a lot of new analytics that weren't there before, but it's so important to have skills with people and bring people together. And Dusty is one of the best at that.
Well, and I think it's interesting, Doug, because, you know, in the new generation, you're talking about with analytics and all the guys, including the new Astros general manager, James Click. We had gotten word throughout the season that there might have been a butting of the heads between Dusty and the analytics department for guys he wanted to play and guys the analytics department wanted to play, so much so that evidently Miles Straw was traded because Dusty insisted on playing him when they wanted him to play guys they felt were more analytical. So we thought that might be something that was going to be a divider between the two for next season. But yet now here we are, and it looks like well-deserved he's coming back. The thing that I would praise Dusty for, and you can talk about, is the fact that he's not a confrontational guy. Like, we see some of these old school guys that are also fiery, and they're going to be like my way or the highway, and they're also going to be very demonstrative about it. The fact that it was so under the radar for so much of the season, and that he even touched on it in the playoffs, saying, hey, we disagreed on a lot of things. I see now some of their points, but at the same time, we were able to coexist. I think that's unbelievable, because I don't think a lot of guys would be able to do that from the old school.
Well, it's true. You have to adapt, you know, you have to survive in this game. And even though you see Brian Snicker, guys who've been around a long time, you know, analytics doesn't have to be this sort of, you know, demonized. It's something that has always been part of the game. We've always tried to find value through numbers and measures and performances. It's just that the way it's played so strongly in real-time decision-making, you know, running a bullpen, here's your lineup today, things like that. That's where it's different. And, you know, now with senior veteran managers like Dusty Baker who can combine that, they'll have success if they can combine that touch and feel for it and also understand the numbers and how to communicate that to the players. A manager that's strong yes, you're going to disagree, and you'll disagree always about whether in your own locker room at different times. But as you mentioned, not spilling it out where it's poisonous or toxic, but you know, understanding that when you build something like a family that Dusty does so well, then when you have disagreements, you can resolve it with respect. You kind of understand that you're still there for the same purpose. And that shows his evolution, which is something central to Dusty Baker. He always wanted to get better, had something to learn, and offer a lot of insight on the other side of that. And I think that's why he's endured for so many decades in this game.
Former big leaguer Doug Glanville works as ESPN as an MLB analyst. What's next for the Astros, a team that's going to have some turnover? Carlos Correa, a free agent, Kendall Graveman, Zach Greinke, Justin Verlander. Looks like Dusty will be back, but Brent Strom, the pitching coach, looks like he's going to retire. How do you forecast the Houston Astros going forward?
It's a tough one because there's a couple of things at play. As you mentioned, the free agent signing is big. Carlos Correa, how all that's going to play out. But on top of that, Major League Baseball is confronted with a possible lockout December 2nd. The labor issue and the collective bargaining is going to be a problem. And if that doesn't resolve quickly, free agency is going to be stalled out for the indefinite future until they come to an agreement. So what that does, it shifts free agency very late, possibly spring training or whatever happens, and then there's going to be a mad dash. And the problem for teams that are kind of putting in these pieces is you don't know who's going to be available or when you could even act on it. So that's going to be tricky. So there's one, you have to look at who's under contract and those players that you feel that are stable. And first and foremost, to make this all work with leadership, you have to establish who's going to run your team. And is Dusty Baker going to come back? So that's the first move they're going to have to figure out. But it's going to be a while before we understand, with this lockout potential, should that happen, it's going to take a minute to figure out what pieces are going to be able to be added.
Doug, what do you look at for the future for this Astros club? Because as I see it, under team control, all these young pitchers, and some of them were in the bullpen, but it seems like they still have enough core pieces and really talented players that they should at least be able to make a run at the division and a playoff run again. What are they missing, and what do you like that they still have?
When you look at the postseason, it might have just been health. You don't have a Verlander. You don't have a McCullers. That front-line starter that can give you the six innings, go up against Max Fried, that was missing. Although there was young pitchers, Valdez, but guys that really showed some incredible upside, they weren't consistent. And when you have a Verlander, for example, at his best, I know he's getting older, you have that dependability of this guy, give him the ball, he's going to put us in a position to win late. And that was the Astros' strength, scoring runs late. And Baker said that all the time. If we win those last four innings, those last three innings, usually you're in great shape. So that's what I think would be a move. It might be just by people getting healthy, but it'd be good to have some depth on that side. Other than that, offensively, what else can you do? You're number one in runs per game, number one in batting average, on base percentage, and second fewest strikeouts in Major League Baseball. I'm not sure offensively you can do much more. That was probably more than enough. Just didn't time out well for them.
Doug, you mentioned the CBA, which ends in about a month. How do you think that's going to affect free agency?
Direct correlation. Especially if it turns into a lockout. If they're saying we'll keep talking, that's one thing. But if it's that's it, December 2nd, we're locking you out, which is the sort of reverse of the strike. The owner side of it, then what happens is free agency stops. It freezes. And so that would have a direct relationship because you can't sign anybody. And so if you're depending on free agency to build your team, you have to wait. And the problem is when you wait, it starts to collect and pool all the free agents to come at the same time. So you push it back. It's late March or something. And then all of a sudden you get a collective bargain. It's let's go. Let's sign. And now you flood the market. And then you're trying to sign everybody under the sun, Correa and also, 10 other shortstops. So that's going to be a challenge. And it might be a problem for the players financially in some ways, because as you get more desperate and it gets later and all of a sudden the season's around the corner, are you going to hold out for that extra whatever, or are you going to try to sign because they're going to use the fact that the supply is going to be really high? So that's what's tough about building a team right now. You just don't know what free agency is going to do for you.
What's interesting is that, the free agents will have about 3 weeks here, right? You have 5 days after the end of the World Series that it opens up the free agency, and then you have it ending in early December. So there's about 3 weeks where free agents could sign. Do you think they'll just wait until they see what happens?
Well, Well, it's tough because, you know, I think of my playing days, your agent's going to say, hey, you know, just you might want to wait for the for the deal, especially if you're a Carlos Correa where you're going to have a lot of bidders. Then if not, if you're not going to wait, then you're going to have to, you're going to shoot for the moon, or you're going to deal with that sort of hometown discount. If you're looking at a Freddie Freeman, for example. So that is a tough decision because you have a period of time and then you have nothing. And if this lockout goes forward. So, and that's going to take a lot of calculus and calculations done by the front office. So this will be a lot of heat on whoever's running these teams, GMs, baseball ops, and to figure out what moves to make, because if you wait and you need a lot of free agents to supplement your team, you might be waiting a long time.
Last question, Doug, do you think that with this collective bargaining agreement, the designated hitter is gone?
You know, I don't know. It seems like there's an appetite to make it universal, and that is another factor about.
I'm sorry. Yeah, because, I meant the designated hitter is consistent on both leagues.
Yeah, I think that's more likely. And part of it is, well, you think if I wear my labor hat from being on the Players Association, a rep there, you think about jobs, right? If you add 15 more jobs in the National League that are pure hitters, pure DHs. That, you know, that can be good for, you know, your constituents, you know, the players thinking, okay, there's some jobs available. Now, yeah, there might be some shift on pitching or whatever happens, but there's no doubt that, you know, I was a National League fan growing up. You know, I grew up outside of New York and North Jersey and a Phillies fan growing up. But I also understand that, you know, it might be a new day and, you know, certainly a lot of fun elements of having that extra bat in the lineup.
Doug, we have ESPN up on our TVs here in the studio. It's amazing how you can do television and radio at the exact same time.
Yeah, it's a, you know, multitasking, man, you know, camera, and then I can actually put on clothes in between answers. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Doug, great stuff. Thanks for hopping on and hope to talk to you again sometime soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
That's Doug Glanville. 1,100 career base hits right on the nose. Currently works at ESPN as an MLB analyst. Great stuff from Doug Glanville. 713-780-ESPN. Season is done for the Houston Astros. How you feeling a day after the World Series is over and the Astros fall for the second time in five seasons? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, trade deadline yesterday, and the Texans did next to nothing. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Doc O and his staff, I believe in these people, and you should too. You will if you go and talk to them, because they're going to show you that they care. They're going to take care of you, and they're going to teach you your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. That means if you're having issues in the boardroom, the bedroom, or the weight room, they can help you get back to feeling like you felt in your heyday, and it's really not as difficult as you think it may be. All it takes is that first visit and a good, honest conversation, and they have everything under their roof that will get you going in the right direction. If you want to get on a workout plan, it starts with a full body composition analysis that literally takes 60 seconds, and then you can chart your progress on a weekly basis. If you need more energy, they have hormone therapy for men and for women and all the different methods that save you time if necessary but still give you the energy that you need. Recovery, HGH peptide therapy, vitamins, all kinds of supplements, fat burners, they got them all. And Doc O used to work at the other clinics. He knows what works and what doesn't. He's not going to try and sell you something that isn't going to get you results. They take care of you every step of the way. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. Book your first appointment. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get that free B12 shot that I get every week. And then, like I said, let the process go from there. Answer their questions honestly. Let them put you on a program, and you're going to see results. I love these people. They're good people doing great things. It's the people at Apollo Men's Health.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, Texans do nothing at the deadline unless you consider Charles Domenyhue for a six-round pick in 2023 something. Nick Caserio speaking for about 40 minutes today and said a whole lot of nothing. Talked about culture, though, and how important culture is. They also cut Vernon Hargraves today. Like I mentioned leading up to the trade deadline that the Texans, if they don't trade Brandon Cooks, they've lost the trade deadline. Brandon Cook still on this football team for whatever reason. I mean, 1-7, not to have your top receiver for rookie Davis Mills. So for me, the fact that they did virtually nothing, they traded Charles Minnehue for a future sixth rounder, that's ho-hum for me. It's another loss for Nick Caserio, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you. Simply because of the fact that, as we talked about, the majority of this roster is not going to be in their long-term plans. The majority of this roster that was brought in under Caserio's watch were signed to minimal money, short-term one-year deals, prove-it type deals, in which you either proved it for your own benefit that maybe you would bring them back, or you proved it so that they had value in the league that another team would want, and you could get whatever you could for them so you could stockpile a lot of the assets and picks, whether they be lower picks or not. You were getting picks as opposed to giving them away like free Kool-Aid like Bill O'Brien was. So the fact that they did nothing, and we both said the most valuable asset you had on the roster, not named Deshaun Watson, was Brandon Cooks. The fact that you suddenly felt like you had something that you were working on and building towards that was valuable enough to talk about one player making a difference in the culture, when all we've heard is a negative culture, including from that player, in terms of the discipline and the work ethic and a lot of the things in the locker room. And it was almost like he was trying to get his butt out of town, but yet you decided this is the one player you've got to keep around for the building blocks of the future. It's just an absolute farce to me. It's just, as much as I've said all along, the one guy of all the changes that they made that I'm going to hold out hope for and give the benefit of the doubt to has been Caserio. And that's why I'm here to hear every criticism that you have, which are valid when he does misstep, just like David Culley. I felt like Caserio, with all his experience under Belichick and with the Patriots, warranted me giving him benefit of the doubt. But the more he does these things on a daily basis, the more I believe, even through osmosis, he didn't get anything. He just, nothing soaked in, seeped in, and is working right now as the general manager of the Texans.
I'm not completely sold that Nick Caserio isn't the guy. There's just been some trends along the way that worry me. I'm still willing to give Caserio the benefit of the doubt. And to be a general manager, you really have to grade a guy based on like a 3 to 5 year body of work. I don't like what I've seen so far, but that's not to say I'm ruling him out as being able to build this franchise and turn it around. Now, I have some questionable, the questionable decisions that he's made, the fact that Jack Easterby is still involved and that Jack Easterby handpicked him, I have major concerns about. The big news heading into the trade deadline for the Houston Texans was, will they trade Deshaun Watson? The only team that seemingly was interested in trading for Deshaun Watson at the deadline was the Miami Dolphins. Chris Greer, the GM of Miami, wasn't too pleased with the tenor of questions he was receiving.
I think any suggestion that this organization would be dealing behind the scenes and trying to influence decisions is absolutely ridiculous and categorically false. So to say that we would be involved in that is just flat wrong. That pisses me off. I'm sorry.
Ooh. Chris Greer. A little upset. Now, was he only talking about the allegations legally with Deshaun?
That's what I was going to say. Okay, so you weren't involved in trying to rectify all the allegations, but you're not denying the fact that your owner and others were in discussions, and maybe if we've heard the reports right, your owner actually talked to him or tried to have a discussion with him to get permission to, so that there was, you basically didn't cover the fact, and maybe he did in the length of his press conference, but that the fact that your team was still mighty interested in the quarterback of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I'm curious your read on this, Dale.
He acknowledged that there were talks, and even they asked him, what would you say to the women in the building if you were bringing in a Deshaun? He said, well, we didn't talk to them because we weren't even anywhere close to making a decision, making the trade. If we had been close, we would have had this discussion with the women in our building. But
do you believe that?
I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? But that was his response to that particular question. They weren't close enough that he felt it was warranted to go have this discussion about bringing in a guy with these type of allegations.
Well, I know John McClain and Mark Berman don't believe that for a second.
I don't think they were anywhere close. I agree with Dell, and I agree with Chris Greer that there wasn't anything here. I think that they were kicking tires. I think a lot of the media got a hold of this. And look, it was the best story right before the deadline, so why not run with it? Jay Glazer was on with Pat McAfee. I believe this was yesterday. He talked about how the Texans screwed up this whole process in regards to Deshaun.
Yeah, but Houston's played this all wrong. And I say this because in training camp preseason, teams were calling. They weren't calling back. They weren't texting back. Like, man, don't not communicate in this league. You never know when someone's going to – and before that, by the way, and I reported this on Fox NFL Sunday a few weeks ago. Earlier this offseason, a team offered them 3-1s and 3-3s, and they turned it down.
So I don't like the what Glazer said in terms of Caserio not talking to other GMs. Like, if he's not talking to other GMs, he's not doing a very good job as a GM. You should be talking to every single team about every player you have on your trading block to see if you can maximize a return for said player. So I hope that's not the case. And if Glazer's report on that is true, that's a huge red flag for Nick Caserio. As far as the 3 first and the 3 thirds, if that is true, is that a loss for the Texans? Because I still believe they get that in the offseason.
Yeah, see, it depends on who it was, too, because as we've talked about, those 3 ones, if they're a team drafting in the top 10, have a ton more value than a contending team that's going to be drafted in the 20s to 30, where you're not going to get as much value. So until you know where everybody's picking, you can all start offering whatever, or say whatever was offered. But look, if it was, you know, if it were teams that were, you know, drafting with high, if it was the Saints, you know, what good is that if you're getting picks in the mid to late 20s for your quarterback when waiting could get you teams that are in the top 10 that are desperate need of a quarterback, whether it be a new team like Atlanta or Carolina or Miami or all the other Denver, whoever it may be, if they continue to struggle, and maybe there are more teams that will, and you'll know where they're picking, that's the key. You can't, again, I go back to the Harden trade. If you were trading with the Sacramento Kings and you knew you were going to get lottery picks for James Harden, 5 of them, that's one thing. But the fact that you took all the picks that were in the late 20s with the way Milwaukee and Brooklyn are set up, I think you lost a ton of value there.
Yeah, I mean, where you pick in the first round definitely matters. And it matters more so in the NBA than it does the NFL. You can get good late first-rounders in the NFL as opposed to the NBA, but still, I mean, you rather have the top half of the draft as opposed to the bottom half of the draft. So I'm fine that the Texans didn't accept 3 first and 3 thirds for Deshaun Watson. I believe they still can get more than that, depending on what happens legally.
But to your point, and this is something that I've learned throughout working in professional sports with general managers and types that work on the basketball or football side, the communication is daily, right? Like, it's like you, me, and Dell putting together a rundown every day, right? We may not be best friends outside of work, and we all have our things to do.
You don't think so?
But we're not yet by any chance, stretch of the imagination. But I believe that, you know what, we have a good relationship, so therefore we're talking on a daily basis. It may be one day where I say, I really got this going on, and I could really use some help here, and I need something. Or it could be just that the open lines of communication are there so that if something does pop up, or I do tell you, hey, by the way, we had a change of heart. We're going with in a different direction with younger guys. We're going to put Whitney Mercilus up or see if anybody has interest in this player or that player. And then the dialogue can lead to quicker deals being done because there's communication. It's just like we said before the deadline. There should have been emails, text messages, or calls to every general manager in this league saying, hey, no one's off limits on our roster. Let me know what you need, and I'm here to help.
Yeah, the lack of communication with Caserio, the rest of the league, if we're believing what Glazer said, is more damaging, in my opinion, than turning down 3 first and 3 thirds. I still believe they'll get more than that in the offseason.
But here's the thing, Jeremy, because I've been the guy that's been given the benefit of the doubt, and you've been the guy pointing out the shortcomings on Caserio, and now here I am starting to turn the corner because it's one thing if you say, well, this is a shortcoming that Caserio blew on this. But then you get into trading draft picks when you didn't have that many to move up to get guys that probably would have been there when you were picking anyway, to giving away a lot of the draft picks for players that don't pan out for you, for the guys you've brought in.
That don't even make camp.
So you're talking about from player evaluations to trying to get training camp convince the media training camp's over so they could keep the media away.
Forgot about
trying
that.
To play just like absolute the media for being stupid, just trying to, you know, think to pull a Belichick move when you don't have the Belichick credentials. It's starting to stack up for me now in multiple areas, from player evaluation to his trading to his drafting to all these different things, to me going, I'm not sure we got the right guy.
713-780-ESPN. Astros falling yesterday in Game 6 of the World Series. Have lost 2 World Series in the last 3 seasons. It's a mourning day for the city. How are you feeling a day after the Astros get ousted from the World Series? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, chances that Carlos Correa returns. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.